a few words, shall we?
These robes are interesting
because they always fall off.
Bowing's a trip. So when I first, because there's no Velcro, right? There's no buttons. There's not even a belt you put around. So when you first learn as a novice, like in Thailand, you go in arms round and in the rainy season, so you've got this thing, you're trying to figure out how to put it on. It's just basically a rectangle, 3 by 2 meters, quite large, which you just roll into a sausage. That's the sausage, and chuck it over your shoulder. So then if you go in arms round, you've got this thing, which is just sitting there. Like it's not pinned down or anything, you know, Velcro, just a bit of Velcro. Then you've got, and it's rainy season, so then you've got your arms bowl over your shoulder, and you've got an umbrella. Right? And then you've got to get the lid off your bowl while they're putting the food in. So then, as you're taking the lid off, your rope slips, and you hit the lady in the head with the umbrella. It's hilarious. But what it can do, it can make you mindful. So, just the breath in the body, learning to be aware of the breath in the body as a way of stabilizing attention. So let's say what I suggest during this retreat is to train yourself not to go into speculative thought. Do that 10 days from now. So if like I say to you, not that speculative thought is wrong, it's fine, but I think the training on a retreat is trying to get this ability to really focus in the present moment and be with the present moment in a very simple way. So let's say if I say something like contentment with little is a foundation for peace and happiness, and then you take that in and you say, yeah, but what does that mean about Darfur? And I mean, if I'm just content with little, I mean, who's going to take care of the people in Darfur? Poop, you're off. You're off in Africa, and you've set up an orphanage, and then the bell rings. So you want to notice speculative thought as a movement of consciousness, not to deny it, not now. Now I'm going to train in present moment awareness. And if you are practicing inner vigilance or inner listening, noticing the types of thoughts, you'll notice that there are certain patterns of the way the mind likes to go off. It might be patterns of worrying about something, patterns about the future. It might be all resentments. It might just be fantasies about the monastery you're going to build next year, or you know, whatever your delight is in life. It might be positive, it might be negative, but it's all in the realm of thought, which is neither right nor wrong. But if we are simply victimized by those thought patterns, or we simply don't notice them, then we won't touch the deep silence of the mind, which is where the true spiritual discoveries take place. So the first step is to actually notice that the mind is thinking, and the patterns of thought. And then the use of the breath and the use of the body is a way of stabilizing attention. So if I notice that I'm fantasizing about going to Killarney with Ron and Ajahn Suchito in June, and this is the kind of thing we've been scheming up, and I really want to do it. So then that's a nice thought in the mind, because I had a nice experience with Ron and Killarney. Actually, at 9/11, we were on Killarney. But so that's a pleasant thing. So the pleasant comes up into the mind, and I'm bored with the breath. So I pick it up. And there I am, I'm canoeing away with Ron and so on. And I have to notice that, obviously. Now, quite often when I notice, I say, oh, come on, you have to try harder now. Get on your breath. And it becomes this imposition of will. That won't work. Because it's still usually, oftentimes, if it is invested with aversion to thought, it won't work, because the intention is not wholesome. But if I notice, okay, there's fantasy, And I want to train the mind, and my movement to something else can be quite deliberate. I'm not going to go there, but it can be with a sense of, now I'm going to train to notice something. And then I can train, I can just hold my hand on my knee and just stabilize my attention by just the sense of pressure. And if I feel the pressure, I can't think. Can't do both. I might alternate quickly, but I can't really do. So if I just make that my intention, I'm just going to train and body awareness. Now, I'm not imposing my will on my body so that I don't think. That will just make me tense. But I'm noticing the patterns of thought, and I'm deciding, well, I'd rather train in present moment awareness. So then I do something. I just feel my body. Maybe I just feel the pressure of the body on the ground. And I hold attention on that. And if you hold it, like if you just listen now, don't think, just listen. Your mind goes silent, doesn't it? And any of the sense bases, you can do that. You can do it with listening. Now that's a training. I'm not imposing my will to stop thinking. I'm saying there is thought. That's a pattern which is unskillful. I'd like to train in present moment awareness because I prefer stillness to noise or whatever, because I've seen that that noise goes on and on and on. And I move my attention and I hold my attention. And it's all skillful. It's wholesome. It doesn't come from aversion. It can be done that way. So, I mean, it's hard to see sometimes. Sometimes the aversions we have and so on are pretty insidious. But that's the principle of training. So we use the body and we use the breath. So like with the breath, some people don't like to do breath practice. So if you find it difficult, welcome to the club. There's lots, you know, people who, so don't worry about some practices which are suggested which don't seem to work for you. Some people like the breath. But the idea is that you're stabilizing attention by really feeling in the body, one out breath. That's all. And then that brings you to stillness. That's all. If you're trying to become still by watching the breath, hence annihilating thought, that won't work because you'll feel tense, because you're trying to get rid of thought. Whereas the attention to the body doesn't have to be tense in that way. It can be quite relaxed. It can be kind. It can be gentle. It can be soft. And it can be delicate, so you can kind of delicately notice something for a span. And if you notice it for a span, and in that span you stabilize the mind. So the patterns keep coming up, the patterns that we have. Now if the patterns have a lot of emotional content, as I've been saying before, then stabilizing your attention in the body will show you that too. So if some kind of pattern of grief comes up, say someone died in the family, or there's some awful loss that you experienced last year, and it's the person's birthday, say, and then all that grief comes up into consciousness, the thoughts are fine, I mean, they'll be there, but if you just go off into the storylines, you can perpetuate the grief. Nothing wrong with grief. But if you say, okay, this is grief, and how does it feel in the body? How does it feel in the breath? And just, you stabilize your attention, you're still with the grief, you're not repressed it, but you've allowed it to kind of process through the energy system rather than being caught up into the thought system. When we do the metta practice, which I'd like to do this morning, the practice of loving kindness, what we do is we recollect the feeling of kindness that we have for beings by bringing to consciousness a being, a person, an animal, it doesn't matter. We recollect that, we bring that into consciousness. We bring a wholesome state of mind to consciousness. Now, you don't want to go off into speculative thinking. And this is what happens. If I bring up the image of my brother, Peter, he just went golfing in Brisbane. I got to shovel the snow. Then, Peter, you creep, you left me with something. You just start thinking about the person. Oh, I hope you're doing all right. You're back at work now, man. Oh, gosh, yeah, it's your birthday today. Hey, happy birthday. You're 60 years old. Oh, you're a rooster. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's thinking about the person. But that's not what we want to do. We want to connect with the feeling of kindness, which is actually very simple. Then we want to let go of the person. Let go of the person. So we can bring up the person and reconnect with that, but then I find it helpful to get a hold of that feeling in the body. What is that like in the body? So the feeling of kindness or affection or tenderness or love has a bodily equivalent. It has a mental part. I can think about my brother, but it also has a bodily part. And so the development of the heart chakra, awareness of the heart chakra, is very rewarding in itself, because the practices of loving kindness bring a certain happiness to the mind, bring a certain brightness to the heart, and make life much more beautiful. But also then it becomes a reference point for the heart closing. If I notice what metta, the practices of loving kindness, do to my body, then when the opposite comes up, like self-disparagement or criticism or judgment of others, I'll be in tune with that in a different area than my thoughts. So let's say I do some metta bhavana, I do some metta practice, and I notice that the body feels relaxed, the heart feels open, and then maybe I'm at the kitchen table, at the dining room table there, and someone's slurping their soup. And I think, slobs, they're not mindful. And the critical mind starts coming up, oh, they dropped a salad on the floor. Or look how much, they took two pieces of cake, I only took one. or whatever the mind is doing, you notice that critical mind is a kind of contraction in the body. Now, and that could be a pattern. That critical mind could be a strong pattern where I'm always just judging things and judging myself and so on. And I said, well, I want to understand that pattern. In fact, I'd like to be able to use that ability to judge, but I don't want to be used by it. There's a difference, like Ajahn Tanisro talks about judicious and judgmental. It's good to be able to use a mind which sees cause and effect and can see differences and so on, but when that mind is just habituated as a pattern in consciousness, it just becomes self-aversion, aversion of others. And I have to realize that. I have to see, well, that's not skillful. I don't want to go there. And that kind of thought pattern, when you refer to the body, is a contraction. It's a tension. It's a tightness. So the cultivation of the wholesome also shows you the how to abandon the unwholesome. And then the abandonment of that unwholesome is the sort of purification that I was talking about. The patterns of unwholesomeness will arise because that's the way the mind's been conditioned. And you don't have to, you can't do much about that. That's just 30, 40 years of life, that's the way it is now. So you needn't be judgmental about that. That's just the way it is. But you can now create causes for happiness in the future. You can now create the conditions for peace in the future, if you understand how it works. So it's more like a changing, a transformation, a changing of direction, rather than annihilation of the negative. That doesn't work, because that's more aversion. Aversion begets aversion. So in the practices of kindness, in terms of your own mind-body system, it's good to develop some kind of language which fits your own psyche, which fits your own body. So I have a friend in Ottawa who's had trouble with extreme self-aversion for years. And she just did a retreat in IMS, and she just heard a phrase which said, I'll have the most, something like the most tender compassion for my self-aversion. So she, and oh, that really fit, and she relaxed. So she found a phrase which fit a pattern which was quite destructive in her own mind. She'd been struggling for a long time, and then she found, oh yeah, that's the phrase. And that's what metta is about. It's not simply, loving the turtles or something like that. It has to be moment by moment attention in an affectionate way on patterns of the mind. So then you can see in terms of if we think about stream of consciousness, in this person's stream of consciousness, there's a kind of there's a situation or event that arises which is which is self-disparagement. So her task is, how can she change stream of consciousness so that when that arises, she doesn't get victimized by it, doesn't believe in it, and it slowly, its power begins to dissipate, right? Because it has a lot of power. So when it arises, if she puts into the mind state, in that stream of consciousness, oh no, there I go again, I'm into self-disparagement, what does that add to the stream of consciousness? More of the same, right? So you're just creating the same pattern. Self-hatred begets self-hatred, so that doesn't work. But if the quality of attention is, maybe have the most tender compassion for this feeling of self-aversion, then what's happening is the quality, the cause for future peace will be there, because the cause is compassion. So you have to put in the right causes if you're going to have a peaceful result, a happy result. In terms of your own, the way you refer to your own mind and body, the way the patterns of criticism or acceptance that you have, find, if there are strong patterns of self-criticism, then discover those and then see, how can you not repress them, but how can you not go there? How can you attend to them in a way which creates more compassion, and so that they die away? So for this person, it seems to me, if they keep at that, each time that arises, if they remember, because that's the problem, remembering, they can say, may I have the most tender compassion for self-aversion, then that, over the years, it's not going to happen in one retreat, but over the years, then that's going to be the powerful factor, rather than the self-aversion. And then the self-aversion will die away, it will fade away, and the mind will have brightness. If, however, the person doesn't attend to that in that way, then the darkness of that pattern will dominate the mind, and the life will be one of that, in those situations, of that kind of self-aversion. And we all have patterns, and the different kinds of patterns affect us in different ways. So it is a path of discovery, and that's the inside part. You're realizing how the patterns work in your mind, and then the creative part, the developmental part, as it were, is not simply following a rule or following a technique. It's getting a feeling for how it works, cause and effect work, and then making those causes for peace and happiness, no matter what the present situation is. So the breath, body, is a way of stabilizing. Body is as a reference point for tension and relaxation, understanding that. And then finding out kind of what works for you. So let's do some of the metta bhava. Stretch your legs a bit and we'll do some sitting.